What did you think of Duke Energy's response to the coal ash pond failure, which led to thousands of tons of coal ash sludge flowing into the Dan River near the utility site in Eden?
I mean, I think they were faced with a very difficult situation, and they obviously didn't know all the facts. It's sort of surprising that they didn't, what they didn't know about their own stormwater pipes running under this coal ash pond. And they obviously were struggling to find a fix, and in consultation with state and federal agencies. And I can't say that they in any way delayed trying to fix the problem once it occurred, but it really surprised me that they didn't know more about the stormwater pipes that apparently are the cause of this spill.
You said you were surprised. Why didn't the utility know the stormwater pipe running under the pond was not reinforced concrete, but corrugated steel and asbestos?
I don't know the answer to that, and I think the other question is, why would one allow the coal ash pond to be expanded to cover these things? These ponds were, built up over a period of years, and, they got bigger as more coal ash were put into them. And I take it from the discussion that we had at the Environmental Review Commission that the stormwater pipes, one or both of them, were not completely under this pond as it was originally being used. It just sort of expanded over them. Again, because of the age of these things, I'm not sure that Duke Energy really has an answer for it.
You have been quoted as saying that you oppose capping these ponds. Why is that?
Because I don't think it is an adequate solution. You cap them by, and that's the effort to try to keep more water from coming into them from the top. But you've got the question of whether water that is in there escapes through the bottom. And they're all very close to rivers. I mean, power plants get built along rivers because they need water, and therefore the coal ash is deposited there. It's probably not a good place to have coal ash stored. And so I think you're going to have to try to move them away from the river, dry them up, and put some sort of lining under them with pumps and a testing regime to make sure that there isn't infiltration of water from some source into the inert coal ash that remains.
As a member of the House, is there a model for what should be done with these coal ash ponds?
Not that I'm aware of in North Carolina. Well, I'm guessing, without knowing, that other states have had to deal with this issue, and that we hopefully can learn how to do it. I mean, it's going to be different. These are 14 different places running from the mountains towards the coast. The topography is different, and I've said consistently, I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all approach to these things. The other thing that's unique is, there's some of them that are at areas where the power company is no longer there. There are some of them that are at a facility where they're no longer generating power from coal, but are, have put a different type natural gas facility, and that's, I believe, what Dan River is. And then you've got facilities that are still producing coal ash, such as the Asheville site. And so, again, that suggests to me there's going to be, there just can't be one approach to these things.
Are you confident the 91-acre coal ash pond at the Asheville Power Station is safe?
I'm pretty confident that we're not leaking right now. I've been out to the site. I think Duke is, trying to address the issue. For example, I mean, they proposed and the Asheville Airport agreed to moving what is largely dry ash over to provide landfill for the Asheville Airport under an extension of a runway. That is all being treated as a toxic material, meaning they're putting protection liners under it, and they're going to continue to test it. That sort of approach to begin to move the coal ash from these ponds is probably the right one. Of course, the cautionary piece on that is, you know, in fact, you're moving your coal ash closer to the river. But I do think that's probably a better solution than leaving the coal ash up at the Asheville facility.
New rules for managing coal ash are being considered at the federal level.
Yes.
Will the spill of toxic coal ash into the Dan River lead the federal government to reclassify coal ash as a hazardous waste? Should it be reclassified?
I don't know the answer to that. I've been expecting that we would get a federal decision on this, and I'm sure the Dan River spill creates some momentum for the federal government to step in. I mean, the coal ash issue is not just an issue in North Carolina. And so it's one of those issues that, you know, power companies are needing to address across the nation. But I guess I'm pretty close to that because I don't think you can simply move the coal ash without putting a liner under it so it doesn't leach out. And I don't think it's generally going to be just, you know, you're going to be able to put some sort of cap on the ones that are in place right now and declare them fixed, because over time that won't work.
What did you think of the out-of-court agreement that the McCrory administration made with Duke Energy pertaining to the groundwater contamination at two of its coal ash ponds, including the one in Asheville?
I understand the process. I mean, the process is what happened here. That is, if somebody is going to sue Duke, they've got to give notice to the state because the state is the one that has the program in place pursuant to federal laws, delegated authority to the state to manage these programs. I don't know the specifics of that agreement. Secretary Scavala and his staff actually had a press conference this afternoon, I believe. And, you know, for the first time, I was hearing some of the provisions in that agreement. You know, the $99,000, you know, like I guess a lot of the public, doesn't strike me as a very strong fine. But the fine is, you know, it has some visibility, but what you really need to understand is what Duke is being required to do pursuant to the settlement. You know, it's not so much what they're getting fined, but, you know, what is it they're going to do? And then, you know, understanding the fine in the context of, you know, how much it's going to cost to make the improvements and the changes that are required by these settlements. Ultimately, it's going to be a judge's call, and he or she, I don't know what judge has it, will ultimately have to look at them and see if it's fair to the public.
Well, some of the groups that filed the original lawsuit, they've charged that it's a sweetheart deal, and they're concerned about the number of years that is included in the settlement to do something about this.
Yep, I understand that. And I would hope that they would pursue those concerns when this thing comes before whatever judge has to determine whether these are fair agreements. They certainly have an interest in this and have a long-term interest in it. They were pursuing those lawsuits.
But do you think this is a fair agreement?
Again, without seeing it, I didn't, until today's press coverage, I had not known the specifics of these agreements, and I still haven't actually read them. So I'm just, you know, I'm cautious, David, to opine about an agreement that I actually haven't read.
A number of years ago, when they're following a hurricane, I believe,
yeah,
some of the hog waste lagoons broke. and legislation followed that environmental disaster. Yep. Is that a model for what should happen?
Unfortunately, I think it's a model of what does happen, meaning that the hog waste issue was out there and people knew about it, and some groups were warning that we had the potential for a catastrophic leak, and then the hurricane came, and we in fact did. Those were much more horrific than what we're seeing here. I hope we use the Dan River spill, and of course we can look back at the TVA spill, which is just so much larger and than the Dan River spill, and use it as a cautionary tale to make sure that we're prepared to deal with the coal ash ponds. We need a plan to deal with them. They're the cost of generating energy. We just can't have the coal ash sitting in ponds right next to rivers that in many cases are the source of our drinking water.
How quickly do you think the legislature can move to enact new rules, new regulations?
Well, obviously we can't do anything until we come back in session, and we don't come back in session until mid-May. I'm pushing for the Environmental Review Commission, which is the legislative committee composed of both House members and Senate members, to continue to take it up. The hearing this week was before the ERC, and I think there'll be... It seemed like there was a commitment to continue to do that, and I'm talking to my leadership and saying that's the appropriate way to deal with this. Personally, I would prefer not to have, in the short session, when you can't actually introduce a bill, you just have to use a bill that's out there. I would prefer not to see some small group of people strip out the language of the bill and insert all new provisions that we haven't had a chance to look at, and I'd like a transparent process. There's a lot of distrust here, and we're not going to get to a better place until we get people, agreeing as to what the facts are and hopefully working to a common solution.
Well, based on that, what's the earliest date that you could see legislation introduced?
General Assembly cannot do anything short of the governor calling us in for a special session, which I've not heard any discussion of. We can't do anything until we come into session on, I think it's May 13th. This is a short session, and so I would expect in May and June, I fully expect that you'll see legislation addressing coal ash.
Chuck McGrady, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.